Knowing how to speak and understand a new language can be an invaluable tool when traveling, meeting new friends, or just even to master a new skill. But it's not always simple when you're bogged down by textbooks and structure classes. That's why so many people trust Rosetta Stone. Rosetta Stone is the most trusted language learning program, available on desktop or as an app. It truly immerses you in the language you want to learn, like Spanish, French, Italian, Chinese, and more. You won't just be studying English translations. The Rosetta Stone intuitive process helps you pick up a language naturally, first with words, then phrases, then sentences. Don't put off learning that language. There's no better time than right now to get started. For a very limited time, listeners can get Rosetta Stone's lifetime membership for 50% off. Visit rosettastone.com/rs10. That's 50% off unlimited access to 25 language courses for the rest of your life. Redeem your 50% off at rosettastone.com/rs10 today.
I can't tell you, just walking around really anywhere, people recognize me and are excited to see me and the rest of it. And one of the things they'll always say to me is they'll say, "Love UBI." it'll be like that. And it happens to me frequently enough where I guarantee that these people are not hanging out on forums or, they don't strike me as activists. And so it seems like there's a ton of energy. And one of my projects now is to try and figure out how to both grow that energy and also translate it into action and policy.
There's so much that can happen at the local level that that I don't think enough people like appreciate. Where, you know, if it may sound like you can't, you know, get your member of Congress or, you know, something to do anything, but there's certainly things like. You know, even another thing that happened in this out of the pandemic was the Mayors for Guaranteed Income launched. And then suddenly that opened the avenue for people to contact their mayors and encourage them to join this and launch a pilot.
That's another thing you can do.
Right.
In addition to the march, you can like yell at your mayor, be like, "Hey, why aren't you part of Mayors for Guaranteed Income?"
And the way that works is, you know, you get mayors on board and then suddenly that lends this idea more credence.
Welcome back to Yang Speaks, everybody. It is Monday, July 19th. Happy Monday. This is your co-host, Zach Grauman. Before we get to today's episode, just a quick reminder. We've got basically some really exciting stuff coming down the pike this fall. Andrew's got exciting stuff. I've got exciting stuff. Carly and Yang Gang friends have exciting stuff. It's going to be a really exciting fall. This summer, we're going to be trying a number of new formats, but we're going to keep coming at you. Yang on Mondays. And Carly Riley and myself on Thursdays with a variety of different formats. Do not miss it. It's going to be great. I think you're going to like what we're coming out with and you're going to love what we're coming out with this fall. Anyway, today's episode's on universal basic income and cash relief with a OG. He's not only OG Yang Gang. This guy was basically the foremost thought leader on basic income in the country. Scott Santons joins the podcast. Is a long time overdue. We wanted to do it. We wanted to do it right. And this was done right. Right now, Scott Santons joins Andrew Yang on Yang Speaks right now.
And we are back. And it's my pleasure to welcome to Yang Speaks the OG, the original UBI godfather, my inspiration and educator for many things, Scott Santons. Scott, welcome.
Hey, Andrew. Good to see you.
It's great to see you as well. So the most important thing is, did you just tie the knot? Did you just get married? Did you just get back from some very ground-bound honeymoon? Tell us more. Tell us more.
I did. I got married on June 16th and got married on a beach in Florida. We did like a big, like over 2 week long road trip driving to a bunch of different places.
That's fantastic. Congratulations, man. Were you with your now wife when you and I were hanging out in New Orleans those years ago?
Yeah, we've been together since 2012. So before I was even into UBI.
Before you were into UBI. Yeah. Can you all imagine all the ladies listening to this, your boyfriend coming back and being like, "Hey, there's this thing, universal basic income. We should totally make it happen. I'm going to get myself one. In your case, you actually got yourself one. By the time you and I met in 2017, you already had universal basic income and had kind of appointed yourself the prototype, which I have to say is the greatest thing of, is the greatest thing of all time. So I want you to reflect on that time in New Orleans when I got a drink with you and I was like, hey, I'm going to run for president on universal basic income. Do you remember that?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, I'll always remember that. That was a big day.
And then, so what did you think when I said it?
I was extremely excited about that prospect. And I was already, like, my mind was already worrying, was already, like, buzzing about the idea of you, like, on the debate stage on a national, you know, platform talking about basic income. I was just thinking, like, how much that would push the movement forward for suddenly, like, everyone watching to be, like, hearing this debate happen and other candidates would have to like have a stance on basic income and everything. So yeah, it was really exciting.
And I remember you having that reaction. I have to say, Scott, your reaction was so pure and unusual because there was no skepticism or anything at all. You were just like, sure. Like, and your mind was going towards the practicalities. So how did you first get into UBI and then make it happen for yourself? Because it really is kind of a dream.
Yeah. I mean, I got into it back in 2013, and it was really through kind of the same route that so many have been introduced to through you, which was the technology route, which is this idea of automation, the impacts of automation, the potential future, the effects of it, and how to, you know, essentially make technology work for us. And it was this actually through the front page of Reddit. There was a conversation about like how no one was talking about how quickly things were going and what that was leading to. And so through that, I was introduced to the idea of basic income through actually the reading the book called Mana by Marshall Brain, which was about like the automation of middle management, really, and what that would do, like starting there and going on. And yeah, just read more about it and learned about like the history of it. I had no idea about what happened like under Nixon and stuff. I had no idea about the pilots that had happened in the US and Canada. Just fascinated to look into all the evidence and, you know, looked into like the philosophy behind it and looked into just really learned more about the way the existing safety net works. And after all that, it was just like, well, this is an extremely important idea, not just for the future, but something that we should have done actually decades ago that we need to do immediately. And reaching that conclusion, I was like, I can't spend any time on anything else because this is just too important of an issue.
I love it. So you read this book, Mana, and then you said, this has to happen immediately. And then you said, I'm going to devote my life to making it happen. I mean, that's pretty extraordinary. Yeah. So I want people to get a sense as to who and what you are now. But Scott is the most prolific universal basic income advocate on the internet and has essentially this compendium of materials for everything under the sun, UBI related, has addressed any question like 10 times over. It's like built like this awesome library. And so back to 2013, what were your next steps? And when did you actually start getting universal basic income for yourself?
Yeah, so one of the first things I did was I got involved as a moderator on the basic income subreddit. And I tried to, you know, engage in those conversations, find like materials to post there and also, you know, consume as much materials as I could to learn more. Then eventually I got to the point where I felt I was comfortable enough to start like writing about basic income and trying to basically serve as like a popularizer and like translator of academic materials to try to explain things simpler and in a more shareable, consumable way. And then around late 2014 discovered like Patreon. And I thought, well, this is like actually a really interesting kind of twist on Kickstarter, where instead of like trying to crowdfund like one stack of something for something, this was like an ongoing monthly crowdfunding. And I thought, well, this is, you know, potentially a brilliant way of crowdfunding a monthly basic income for perpetuity. So I decided to go for that. And it's funny too, like that was actually that conversation I had with my wife, Katie, you know, at that time was just like, I have this idea. I think that I can achieve this and I could focus on this full time if I can do it. And, you know, I'm like, well, you know, she thought, well, you know, maybe just, she was hesitant and, you know, doubtful, but, you know, I did it. And, you know, we look back at that conversation too. It's like, well, yeah, like we, sure enough, you put your mind to it and you did it.
So when you say you did it, you went out to the Reddit community and said, hey guys, I want to popularize universal basic income. So chip in $25 a month. And then if enough people do it, then I can just do this all the time. Was that the pitch or what was the pitch?
Yeah, essentially. So when I set up my Patreon, it was like, so this, the goal of this is to crowdfund a basic income so that I can focus full time on basic income. And so I launched that in late 2014 and it took all of 2015 to, you know, build it over time. And then I achieved my goal of $1,000 per month starting in January of 2016. So it was also interesting, that process where, you know, I would write something and then, you know, you put at the end, you can support me on Patreon and, you know, doing podcasts and stuff, you get the word out. And then just slowly over time, more people would join in and start donating, say, $1 a month, $5 a month or something. And that process was actually educational in itself because, you know, when I was at, say, $400 per month, like just that's not $1,000 per month. But because I knew that a $400 per month would be there on the first of next month, then that in itself was like this reduction of insecurity, like this kind of feeling like that that's going to be there and it's going to make a difference. And so that's even why I feel as I feel about like smaller basic incomes, or, you know, people say, oh, $1,000 a month, that's nothing. And it's like, well, no, like even 500 is really something, 400 is something, 300 is something. It's all something to actually know that it's going to be there, to have that stable source of security.
I just want to say, just a total aside, I was just notified that I was going to get a $164 check for the Korean royalties of the War on Normal People. Mm-hmm. And I was like, $164, great. So I'm with you. It's like, you know, like everything is something, you know, like that. It felt meaningful. And if that was coming in every month, it would be tremendously impactful for just about anyone, I think.
Yeah, absolutely.
So it takes you a year to get this $1,000 a month. We might as well do this segue right now. If someone wants to support you, they go to scottsantons.com.
Yeah, it's patreon.com/scottsantons, or you can find me through my website at scottsantons.com.
I'm a contributor. This podcast is sponsored by ExpressVPN. Going online without ExpressVPN is like changing while leaving your window wide open. You might not have anything to hide, but why give randos a chance to invade your privacy? When you go online without a VPN, ISPs can see every single website you visit, and they can legally sell this information without your consent to ad companies and big tech, who can then use your data to target you and profit, not to your benefit, generally at your expense. So using ExpressVPN, it's like being a member of a high-tech company that's on your side, where they beam you into a server in another part of the world. No one can see anything you do. Just fire up the app, click one button, and you're beamed onto a completely safe, anonymized internet. They can't do anything with your data. I use ExpressVPN to have that peace of mind. To secure your online activity by visiting expressvpn.com/yang today. That's expressvpn.com/yang. And you can get an extra 3 months for free. expressvpn.com/yang. So Scott was the prototype and had been making this case since before I arrived on the scene. And when I was educating myself in 2017, Scott was the first place on the internet, I stopped. And I remember this vividly, Scott. I looked at your social media and I said, wow, Scott Sanders has 100,000 followers. That means 100,000 people must love universal basic income. That's what I thought. I got together with you and other people, and there was a universal basic income community that has grown. And one of the things that we're going to talk about in a little bit is the state of affairs right now, because you're a senior advisor to Humanity Forward, which has been lobbying for cash relief on Capitol Hill. So we can hear about the absolute latest. But we'll continue on this timeline. So in 2017, you and I sit down in New Orleans. I'm like, hey, I'm going to run for president on this. And you were enthusiastic, which was not the case for everyone. I mean, and I'm sure you remember when emails from me started popping up into the universal basic income mailing list being like, hey guys, running for president, like, here's what we need. We need review. And you were always like, yeah, let's do it. It's great. And then other people were like, I'm a nonprofit, like, you know, right. So like there was a small clutch of people on that listserv like you that were like, yeah.
And like, you know, the subreddit was there too, but like the subreddit, it's just like the way like all this stuff works is, you know, let's say 50,000 subscribers to a subreddit. It doesn't mean like everyone's there reading it all the time. It doesn't mean that everyone's like engaging in it. It doesn't mean that everyone's like clicking on the stuff. So, you know, you have like it feels like there's a lot of support, but then when it comes down to like donating, then that's something different. And also it's like, you know, this is an idea that is most useful to the people who lack the money to help make it happen. So it's like, that's another barrier to cross as well. There's just a smaller percentage of people that can actually, you know, donate.
Yeah, that is a problem for sure. In America, money talks. And so the people that need universal basic income the most aren't as visible or audible. You know, like you wouldn't believe some of the things that people said to me on the trail, or even what you just said, hey, $1,000 a month, yeah. Like, you know, that's not meaningful. I'll be like, well, if you talk to that person over there, I feel like that they'd be super amped about it. So 2018, 2019 happens and you were a real champion on the trail. That was good fun. I would see you in Iowa, I would see you in different places. You'd pop up. So what was the campaign like from your point of view? Because you and I haven't really compared notes on it, except for the, you know, times I'd actually see you.
Yeah, I mean, it was a real experience, you know, being able to go to Iowa to be a part of that there on like the, you know, right before the very first state, you know, voted. And the thing that I remember most out of that experience is just, you know, getting to meet so many members of the Yang Gang in all these different cities in Iowa. And as I like drove across the state going to different places. And that's really what stuck with me is this like feeling of this, you know, family, this community of people who, you know, really wanted to make a difference. And they were there to, you know, try to change the world for the better. Doing this thing that was considered to be, you know, impossible for so many. And that just really stuck with me. It was just an incredible group of people and just very passionate about this idea. And it just felt like more like family instead of like, you know, just a community.
Well, there's a unifying spirit to people who love universal basic income. And one of the things that I've grown to understand more fully is that I think people that love universal basic income have a belief in humanity and a sense of possibility. And those things are wonderful. And it's one reason why when I encounter people who supported me on the campaign, I love them like 95 times out of 100. You know what I mean? Like really, really positive, optimistic, wonderful people. And there's a sense of abundance, really, that like we can do this. If you do well, that's good for me. Like there's no like, oh, if you do well, like it somehow hurts me, which unfortunately I think is pervasive in American life today, where the scarcity mindset is so strong. So I'm so glad that you had that experience. I've talked to many people who've had the same experience. I had the same experience. So aside from the times I saw you in New Orleans, because I came back and campaigned and that was fun. I saw you in Iowa. Where else did you and I hang out, or where else did you campaign during that time?
Well, I mean, I even think too about our times. You know, it wasn't the first time that we met when we met here in New Orleans. You know, we met previously through to, you know, essentially like the origins of the Economic Security Project. And you know, I remember too that when we were sitting at like the, I think it was called the Cash Conference, and you know, spent some time together there, you know, sitting watching stuff and talking about you know, making it happen, whereas like, you know, some other people were there talking about these smaller steps and things, and it's like, no, we just gotta do this.
I remember that too. I remember sitting there with you, and there were a couple of other people with us that you know, I'm still good friends with. It was a fantastic launching pad. And one of the things that happened for me, so deciding to run for president, first exploring running for president, because I thought, well, if someone else is going to do this and make this case better than me, then, you know, I'm happy to not do it. But then going around being like, hey, you know what's going to do this? Everyone was like, no. So yeah. I was like, all right, I guess it's me. and so you were pumped about it. And Andy Stern was pumped about it. Misha Challen was pumped about it. Serkan Piantino was pumped about it. Like, there are different people who were just like, yeah. Yeah. And a bunch of us were sitting together at that Cash conference. I remember.
And I remember too, like along the way, like there was a big moment. It was just like such a long process. Like you said, it was like 2017 we started running, and you know, the election was 2020, and it's like this such a long ramp up. And I remember watching your Joe Rogan appearance, you know, as it happened, and you know, then I like I texted you afterwards, the like right after I watched it, to be like, you know, this is going to be like a big thing. Like that was like an incredible appearance, and so many people watching it, like I knew like that was going to be a moment. And like, sure enough, like that was a really big shift in your entire campaign and I would say the UBI movement as a whole.
Yeah, it was that had an historic feel. It was February 2019, and the campaign did take off after that, where after that I'd get recognized on the street regularly. My wife Evelyn started joking that we can't take you anywhere because it would yeah. It would end up descending into, you know, selfies and whatnot, which is cool. I mean, I enjoy that stuff, but it was a drag for Evelyn because it would just take us forever to get anywhere. So that was February 2019, and then the debates are through the summer. Really, that summer too was enormous. And then we wind up campaigning in Iowa in the winter of 2020. And then the campaign ends, and then COVID hits. And so at that point, we started Humanity Forward, that you're now an advisor to, and we converted to cash relief and advocacy and lobbying.
This podcast is sponsored by Helix Sleep. I have always been a mattress guy. I thought if you're going to spend 8 hours doing something, you should pay attention to what you're doing it on. That's why I love the Helix Sleep product. It is made for me. I am someone who sleeps on my back. I do not sleep hot. I like a firm mattress. And so when I took the Helix Sleep quiz, I wound up with a Helix Dawn model. And it's been fantastic, not just for me, but for my kids who seek it out of the entire house. Don't want to take my word for it? Helix has been awarded the number one mattress pick by GQ and Wired magazine, and they have a 100-night free trial and 10 to 15 year warranties baked in. That's confidence in your product. And if you get on a Helix Sleep mattress, you will see why they are so confident. Helix is offering 20% off all mattress orders and 2 free pillows for our listeners. Go to helixsleep.com/yang and use code HELIXPARTNER20. This is their best offer yet, and it won't last long. With Helix, better sleep starts now.
The CARES Act got passed, and then some time passed. There have been three checks that have gone out, and a child tax credit that just kicked in. So 36 million families are getting $300 a month now. And that's something that really should be extended in perpetuity. I mean, that's an enormous part of the future in my mind. Where do you see the current lobbying efforts on Capitol Hill? And how would we project forward the movement?
So, first of all, your role in this is your campaign for president was just like perfectly timed for what ended up being this disastrous pandemic that happened just like right afterwards. I mean, it was already starting to happen. I remember reading news about stuff coming out of China and everything. And it had no idea at the time that it was going to blow up into a pandemic. And also, like, I remember thinking in writing about this too, thinking that, okay, when the next recession hits, then there's going to be a lot of automation that happens as a result. People are going to lose a lot of their jobs. Those jobs are going to come back because that's what happens during recessions. And so that will be this like catalyst to really push basic income forward. But even thinking that, I had no idea that it would be a pandemic that would actually be this catalyst. So that happened as it did, like just so many people becoming unemployed and also even employed, but losing so much income. And, this massive federal response that happened, like, fortunately, I think that there's a connection there between this rising popularity of basic income and this immediately going towards these $1,200 checks in the CARES Act. And, it's like one of those things where I don't know if that would have happened in the same way had you not won for president and had the basic income movement not been building up over the years. But it did happen that way, that $1,200 went out. And I think that was a game changer because then that set this new precedent. And sure enough, it was followed the next by $600. And again, that wasn't going to happen immediately either. Like Humanity Forward was directly involved in the happening. And I know that was a moment of great pride for you to have been involved.
Oh yeah, I had calls with dozens of members of Congress on both sides of the aisle, and one of the things that always impressed them was the popularity of cash relief, where pandemic cash relief had something like 82% approval.
Yeah, it's one of the most popular things that the government has ever done.
Yeah, I got a question. Those 18%, they're like, no.
Right. Well, not everyone got it.
So those conversations leading to actual relief for tens of millions of Americans was one of the high points of my life where, imagine feeling like you might have played a role in billions of dollars going out to people. I mean, it's a really good feeling. Great feeling. And then I was in Georgia and it ended up being one of the central issues in the entire freaking Senate race over there where the Democratic candidates were very openly campaigning on $2,000 relief checks. And then Mitch McConnell ended up getting on board in part because he was trying to help the Republicans win.
Yeah, I mean, the politics around that moment was just so big where, you had like Mitch did not want that to pass. You know, the bill that did pass in the House, Mitch was like, no, we're not going to pass $2,000. That's ridiculous. And, then Trump was like, $2,000, it needs to be $2,000. So suddenly that shifted the conversation. And the Democrats are like, Trump says $2,000, let's do this, you know. And so that became this huge part of the conversation. And sure enough, like you said, in Georgia, they're pushing for this and saying, vote for us and we're going to be able to actually do this because Mitch is going to lose power. We're going to gain power. This is the difference in Senate power and we can get that $2,000 to you. And you can see like the polling where like that really moved the needle where they started saying, vote for us and we'll get you the $2,000. And then boom, that pushes it up enough that I think that they were able to pull off that victory. And so, yeah, it's incredible that not only, you know, you were down there to be a part of that, and this basic income conversation, the cash was part of it. And so then we got that third check afterwards, this, you know, $1,400 check. And now that's such a big deal that there's just three checks now. And, you know, the question still remains, is there going to be a fourth check? And, you know, possibly not, probably not. But the possibility is out there, depending on what happens to the economy, in a way that it just wasn't part of the conversation before. And then sure enough, these monthly checks now for parents is effectively like basic income for kids. And that too is going to stimulate the economy. That's going to function as a monthly stimulus payment for so many people. And so many people are going to get used to feeling the security from this monthly check that's entirely independent of work, and feel that, you know, you can't take that away. That's going to be an extremely popular program. And I think it'll get people thinking, well, why don't we do more of this? Why don't we make sure that adults without kids get this too? Let's just make sure everyone has this economic security.
The child poverty tax credit is enormously impactful, and anything we can do to help make it permanent, we should do. One of the interesting things is that Republicans were for it because it felt pro-family, and I agree with that. I know. I mean, heck, anything that gets cash into American families' hands, I'm all for. It's been incredibly invigorating to see Humanity Forward develop into this nonpartisan / bipartisan lobbying shop where it's become a real player, and the team is very talented and they've hired experienced lobbyists. It reminds me of this Onion article that really helped shape something for me forever, which was like the American people hire their own lobbyist to fight for their interests on Capitol Hill. And it was like, this way the American people will have. So I feel like Humanity Forward has become the people's lobbyist that way. And universal basic income is something that there is no natural interest group for, except for the people. You know, it's like, who's universal basic income to help? It's like, well, all of us. It's like, well, who cares about that? So this people's lobby on Capitol Hill is so fascinating to me. And the fact that that's now a permanent fixture, I mean, you know, it's getting support from different players and diverse support. And anyone who wants to support this mission, you can go to humanityforward.com and, you know, make individual contributions too. But I have to say, talking to the team at Humanity Forward, after I got off the mayoral, because I hadn't talked to them in a little while, was so uplifting. You know, it makes me feel like we're set to do an enormous amount of good for years and years to come.
Yeah, absolutely. There was, you know, again, one of the best things that come out of your campaign, and to be able to launch like right during the pandemic to get cash to people. I mean, I know that made a huge difference in people's lives too, just getting those like the micro grants out to people. And it was just, you know, immediate. It was before the government was even getting checks out too.
Now, we distributed $12 million or so directly to people in varying amounts. And, you know, this is a deep question for us all, is that if you had a choice between taking $12 million and giving it to struggling Americans, which we did do, and taking $4 million and spending it on lobbyists to try and get, or ads or, you know, mailers or whatever the heck, to try and get $100 billion from the government for Americans, like, which do you choose? You know, so what we did in real life was we said $12 million directly to people, and then, you know, maybe $3 or $4 million on lobbying. You know, is that the right mix? but that's a real thinker for the people at home. And when I tried to figure out the return on investment for the $600 checks, it was something like, you know, over 1,000,000%. And one of the business truisms is that lobbying is a very high efficiency activity, or high impact activity, where like for every lobbying dollar, you get like $12 in economic returns. I mean, it's crazy.
Yeah. If you're a multi-million dollar, like, you know, giant corporation, like, why would you not spend at least some percentage of your money doing that if it can mean, you know, a huge return on that investment? So, yeah, that's just how it works. So, yeah, we need to have a people's lobbyist. We need to have this organization that's making sure that, you know, instead of relying on charities to get money to people, that the government actually does its job and gets money to people. And that, you know, we shouldn't even be having to go through this process in the first place. Like, you know, we should have had a basic income in place before this pandemic even hit. We should have had, you know, automatic stabilizers in place that automatically started getting, you know, kicking out unemployment boosts to people and, you know, monthly stimulus checks to people above their basic income. Like, you know, we should automate more of this to make sure the government actually gets money to people when the people need it. And it's a matter of setting that up.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
So if someone watching this at home wants to help make the case for cash relief, because I know there's so many people that want to see this happen, and there are different things you can do. You can, the traditional thing is like write your member of Congress. They can certainly support Humanity Forward. But like, when someone asks you this question, like, where do you send them?
Yeah, I mean, there's certainly more options now. And I guess one of the questions I ask is like, you know, what is it that you want to do? And not only like what's available, but even like what skill sets do you have that you could even create something new? Like what would be even like an enjoyable thing, like a fun thing for you to do? You know, maybe you'd like to write something. Maybe you'd like to, you know, as for like a, you know, submit it to your local paper, or maybe you'd like to write to your members of Congress, or maybe you'd like to start up a podcast, or maybe you already have a podcast and like, let's do like a topic about basic income or something along those lines. Like, you know, there's various things that people can do, and certainly, you know, getting money to, as funding for Humanity Forward is you know, a great way to go about that now. But you know, also I really like
ScottSands.com. No need to feel restricted.
or ScottSands.com. But also, you know, Income Movement, which is at IncomeMovement.com, is doing a lot of great stuff, grassroots organizing. People can, you know, be involved there. That's great. And also we've got the, you know, the Basic Income March is coming up here in September. And that's really exciting to see happen again. Hopefully there again be even more people this time than the previous times, and that could show even more movement. So people can, hey, if there's already something scheduled and a march in your place, then in your area, then, you know, please attend it. And if there isn't, then please be that person that, you know, sets it up and helps organize that. So there's definitely things that people can do that, you know, didn't really exist years ago.
So you've seen basic income grow from this marginal thing no one had heard of back in 2014, let's call it, and then 15, 16, and now in 2021. It feels to a lot of people like we're this close. I mean, it feels like that to me. You know, we're sending out checks to tens of millions of people. It's like, why don't we just keep on doing it? You know, it has grown. The majority of Americans are for it. I can't tell you, just walking around really anywhere, people recognize me and are excited to see me and the rest of it. And one of the things they'll always say to me is they'll say, love UBI. it'll be like that. And it happens to me frequently enough where I guarantee that these people are not hanging out on forums or, you know, that like they're not, they don't strike me as activists. And so it seems like there's a ton of energy. And one of my projects now is to try and figure out how to both grow that energy and also translate it into action and policy. So we have Humanity Forward on the lobbying side. We have people who can do things like participate in the Basic Income March and organize locally. And so now my efforts are going to go towards trying to make it so that our government's actually more responsive to the will of the people, because that connection has unfortunately been breaking down for quite some time.
There's so much that can happen at the local level that I don't think enough people like appreciate, where, you know, if it may sound like you can't, you know, get your member of Congress or, you know, something to do anything. But there's certainly things like, you know, even another thing that happened in this the pandemic was the Mayors for Guaranteed Income launched. And then suddenly that opened the avenue for people to contact their mayors and encourage them to join this and launch a pilot.
That's another thing you can do.
Right.
In addition to the march, you can like yell at your mayor, be like, hey, why aren't you part of Mayors for Guaranteed Income?
And the way that works is, you know, you get mayors on board and then suddenly that lends this idea more credence. And then also you've got like city councils that are looking at this. You've got like also yesterday was a big day too, because California passed the first bill for a publicly funded like ongoing guaranteed income program, which is for foster youth. And that too came from a pilot that started in Santa Clara County that came from I'm a board for the Fund for Humanity, the Gerald Ford Fund for Humanity. And that was a pilot that was started there, which is this little pilot for a small group of youth aging out of the foster youth system. And that did so well. And also it happened during the pandemic. California, you know, looks at this rising popularity that again came out of Stockton. And they say, well, let's do this statewide and like a permanent thing to make sure that those aging out of the foster youth system have a basic income for 3 years. And now that's a real thing. Like that is a thing now as of yesterday. So again, it's just amazing to watch these, how something can be, you know, small and grow over time. One pilot may seem like a small thing, but it can grow into much bigger things. And I think that over time, we're going to see this stuff get bigger and bigger. And all of that lends more momentum to the whole thing to get more people on board, more organizations on board. And then once you get those kind of organizations, then they're putting pressure on the members of Congress that would usually not listen to people. And now they feel they have to, because the ones who hold influence over them are saying, look, you need to do this. And that's really how stuff gets done.
So if someone comes to you and they just want to find out more about universal basic income, and then you say, okay, here are the things you should do. So for you back in the day, it was MANA. For me, it was Raising the Floor by Andy Stern. Is there like a starter you give them, like, hey, read this book? I mean, certainly you are the internet's library on this. So like I refer people to scoutsands.com, but like what do you tell people to do?
Like, yeah, I mean, that was the reasoning that I even started writing, because it was like this kind of a long map project of, I want to cover all of these different frequently asked questions. I want to cover these different angles and put it all into one place. And so I have that FAQ on my blog, and I refer to people to that a lot. And I even, you know, because I have various articles for different commonly asked questions, then I just share those a lot as ways to get people introduced to the idea. So yeah, like that was, instead of like stopping or not doing anything and writing a book that, you know, I could have spent years or something writing that, I just wanted to get little pieces of shareable content out and create almost like a table of contents for your multiple normal questions that are asked. And I think now at some point I'll hopefully transform that into a book here in the immediate future too, to make that even easier. But
the short answer to this, Scott, is you just say like, hey, read Yang's book. I mean, that could have been, you know, yeah, you have to go through all of this. Like,
that's good. That's a good intro too, for sure. And also Andy Stern's book. There's, and that's the thing too, is there's just a great many books that can introduce people in different ways. And it's important to match that book with them. So, you know, maybe someone doesn't care about the automation argument. Maybe they care about, you know, the way the welfare system works right now, their existing safe net. I would say, hey, read, you know, Tyranny of Kindness by Teresa Funicello. Like, that's like a great book to read.
Or you know who's doing a sequel to that book right now is Annie Lowry. Annie Lowry is apparently neck deep in how the welfare system works. Really excited to see what she finds out. I like where you're going with this. This is an important task, Scott. So what you have to do is you have to say like, well, what kind of person or reader are you? And then being like, if you're this, read Yang's book. If you're this, read Teresa's book. If you're this, like that's very interesting.
Yeah, you can help or taxonomize. Listen to this podcast. You know, if you're not a reader, then listen to this. Or if you prefer watching, you know, documentaries, then here's like a documentary you got to watch first. Like, yeah, it's all about meeting people where they are and make sure that, you know, they're able to consume something about basic income in a way that they prefer and that reaches them based on, you know, be they liberal or conservative or libertarian or Green Party or whatever. There's just so many different angles to get people to understand.
So people want to support you, scottsantons.com. What do you see as like the next couple of steps in the movement? I'm so grateful to you, man. I mean, like going through this journey with you, I mean, you've taught me a lot. I genuinely do. Like people are like, oh, Andrew Yang's Mr. UBI. And it's like, sort of. I actually think Scott deserves that title more than I do. How would you recommend that people best support the movement?
Yeah, that's a good question. And I think number one key is first of all, you know, becoming more educated on the topic. So, you know, just like my own process was I didn't want to like start speaking about it or, you know, writing about it, or do anything when I didn't feel I knew enough about it. And so that involved this educational process of doing a lot of reading and, first. So I always think that's key is definitely learn more about it so you can speak about it. Cause you don't want to, it works so much better to be in a conversation with someone and be able to answer all their questions instead of being like, I don't know, I hadn't thought about that. That kind of thing. So education important. And another part is, finding the right thing for you, being, you know, at least donating to organizations is definitely very helpful. If you can't do that, you know, there's just so many other things you can, write, you can, contact, you can be like, become that person that's annoying.
My preferred method is just to open the window and just start yelling some variant. I change what I yell. I can scream, cash for all, basic income, give people money. I change it up based on the day. Just open the window up and just yell.
I'm mad as hell. I'm not going to take it anymore without a basic income.
For me, a couple of things I've concluded. Number one is just take action of some kind. Yeah. It doesn't even matter what it is, to Scott's
just
point.
Anything.
Just like do something that you can then turn to and say, well, that's what I did. And if it's something that you are going to do repeatedly or that you're going to end up spending time on, great. But, you know, just know yourself and what you, what is going to work for you and just do that thing. It can be buying a copy of a book and giving it to a friend. It can be taking a news clipping or a podcast recording and trying to send it to people.
Yeah, it can be engaging on social media and just like, you know, a like here and there, a view here and there. Like that was something I feel that was that the Yang Gang utilized well during your presidential campaign was it was making a point of making sure that people knew that they should click on stuff. Like if something is about something that you think that there should be more of, I mean, that's what we're in this like click view world. And, you know, that's part of the problem, but we can leverage it to be useful by making sure that stuff that it talks about basic income,
Scott. Yeah, very narcissistic. Scott's like my shit. That's what you could do. The highest use. It is true that because one of the things that is out there is that journalists write about UBI. And then if you amplify their stuff, then they're more likely to write more about UBI or someone else's. I mean, that is a thing.
Yeah.
One of the things I'm going to throw out there, Scott, and this is the way my mind works, and this is foreshadowing for, where I'm going to turn my energies to next. But I believe we've won this argument. I believe at this point, everyone's like, wow, we definitely have the money. It definitely helps people. We should be doing more of it. And so the question is, having won the argument, having gotten to a point where a majority of Americans are for it, how the heck do we get it done? And that is, to me, the next question we have to answer. But we wouldn't be at this point without you, my friend. Congratulations on the nuptials. Congratulations on being hopefully the first of approximately, you know, a couple billion prototypes of universal basic income recipients. It makes you smarter, more attractive. we should do it for everyone. But yeah, man, congrats on everything. I'm so happy for you and Katie, and hopefully we'll have a chance to celebrate together in person soon.
Yeah, thank you. I'm just so excited about this, and I'm excited for all the people out there, you know, as of yesterday that started getting these checks. I mean, if you've got two kids, that could be $500
per month. If you're getting this check, jump up and down and say, I love this check. And if anyone tries to take it away from me, I'm going to vote them out of office. That's a very good recommendation.
Yeah, yeah, definitely. And make sure that everyone knows that that's extremely popular, and you will not be voting for someone who somehow tries to get rid of it. And that's the thing. Like each win builds on the next win. And we just had some big wins yesterday. We're going to get some more, and, you know, we'll get there. Hopefully sooner than later. But really, like you said, it just feels like it's around the corner. And if we just get enough people involved and we remove the obstacles that you will be helping tackle this next and pushing for that, if we get those obstacles removed, it's going to be so much more possible. And just so many other things become so much more possible too.
Yes, we've won the argument. Now it's time to win the future. Thank you, Scott Santins.
Thank you, Andrew.
Appreciate the heck out of you, man.
Thank you. Appreciate you too. And yeah, it's just great to see you again.